Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon.
Hello. Welcome to Giant Fork and Spoon. I'm your hostess, Chef Elena Alexander. No reservations are needed to be seated in our Word Cafe. It is here where we are serving up lots of hot topics about my favorite subject, food. Please subscribe to our channel as we continue to put more dishes on the podcast buffet. Our companion blog, giantforkandspoon.blogspot.com, is also available to view and subscribe. Our conversations here are sure to entice your palate, awaken your curiosity, titillate your intellect, and satisfy your cravings for food for thought. We will talk to foodies, chefs, culinary educators, and just about anybody who loves food. So, let's get you seated and get ready for today's Blue Plate Special.
Good afternoon. I am live for the very first time on Blog Talk to get conversations started with Chef Ramona. Introduce yourself, Ms.
Hello. Good afternoon. I'm glad to be here. My name is Chef Ramona Baptiste of Chef in the Hood. Healthy eating at its best to be here.
Great. So glad to talk to you. You and I have been connected via social media for a little while now. We're in a couple of groups together. Online, but we've never spoken much in person. Can you give me and our listening audience some information about where you grew up, where your cultural background is throughout your family? Baptiste is a look like the French New Orleans type of culture. Am I right?
New Orleans, no, I was just married into the name, but I had an opportunity to adapt to some of the cuisines of my, how do you say, in-law.
Okay.
Well, a little bit about myself. I'm late in the culinary world in which I really didn't think about doing it until my daughter, she just gave me an idea because I used to do a little bit of catering. So she said, well, why not go to another level just in case things happen at the real job? You know, I work for AT&T and it was about to lay off. So I decided to go into another realm. And
okay. Beautiful.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. Okay, I'm sorry.
No. Don't worry about that. I'm trying to get my little technical pieces to work the way they're supposed to. All right. So.
Right.
You initially had another career in the retail segment.
I'm in the telecommunications type system. I was a maintenance administrator for AT&T.
Okay.
And they were downsizing. And it got to the point in which, even though I had 25 years of service, I had more people that had more service than I had. So it was like one of those choices. Either you get shipped out or you get shipped out. You know, either way it goes. It wasn't
okay.
A good choice. So my daughter said, well, you know what? Why don't you do this? Go and seek something else, because one thing we do in our community and just the world, we eat. So you're always going to have a job in the food industry as long as we keep eating. So this is what I did. But in turn, things came out pretty well, in which I was still able to keep my present job. I went on and moved out to the suburbs, did that for a little while, and I had an opportunity to come back to the city. So now, just going through the culinary industry. It's a hobby. So I'm a graduate of AI 2007 with honors.
Awesome.
I took my experience a little bit further. I became a nutritional specialist and a diabetic educator. The reason why I did that is because I suffer with chronic illness. I'm a diabetic, and I just want to be able to help my community and beyond. Just being out there, just being in the community. I did a lot of voluntary services in the underserved community, and I realized that we have people of color, not just us, but a lot of others, but especially in our culture, that we have problems with childhood obesity and just about everything. But also consider where we live at. Look what we have around us. So I call myself trying to make some changes.
Okay. Fantastic. What area in the Chicagoland market are you primarily associated with?
What area? Right now, I'm on the west side.
Okay.
In the Austin community. Yeah, and the people there have embraced me more than my south side. Like I said, I'm a south sider of Chicago. And for whatever reason, they're not embracing this. So I have to go where I'm needed. And they just happen to need me. Then also, I try to stay in with farmer markets. You know, I love farmer markets. So I said, I might as well take it to another level and then get involved even more. So I do food demonstrations because we have people that are not familiar with the type of foods that a lot of these farmer markets. I'm here to show you what it tastes like, what it is, and take it home with you.
Oh, that is so great. The amount of culinary education has something that's really close to my heart. I serve eighth graders and especially of kids of color. I've got to the idea of who is really have a lot of nutritional background on education, what they're eating, how it affects their body, what kind of it's promoting or and on top of that, there's a big difference between good for you and what is good to eat. They are not, and it's good. And hot sauce tastes good, and they don't have a connection of this stuff can cause disease, ulcers, diabetes, and all the whole gamut of issues. So you and I are talking about the same subject to do different audiences. And it's
right.
Outside that, have you had much experience in the culinary world? Have you worked in the real kitchen or restaurant?
In the restaurant industry, well, I've worked with Food for Thought, off-premise catering company, but actually being in a restaurant, not much. I've had experience working at Horseshoe Casino, but I'm at the time of my life and also at the age in which I really don't want to work in the restaurant. It's too much hustle and bustle going on, and everybody's set in their own ways. So I just like the freedom of being able to take my crusade and just move it around freely. You know, I'm more of a free bird when
okay.
it comes to just spreading out my knowledge, you know, within the community and beyond. So, no, I don't want to be locked up in a restaurant. No.
That's cool. I would admit any subjects as complex as food, you will notice that there are ways to be a part of it. And food touches so many different elements and touch tones. And, you know, we all eat. We all have, you know, diverse cultural backgrounds in this nation. And how we share that amongst us, that information, is phenomenal. It can happen on so many levels.
Right. Right.
What is it like for you to be a woman of color who's not 15 years old anymore and is, and you're working with the audience that you're working with? How is that?
Okay, now that's a good one. With the audience that I'm working with are mainly, so far I've been fortunate, are young adults. I've got several awards from Chef Moves to School, so I was able to conduct a few cooking classes at Harlan High School.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked with Cooking Matters, and I was able to, like I said, we stick with our young adults. We're looking from the age of 9 to 17, and they were wonderful. Okay, but now I'm working with adults such as myself. And
mm-hmm.
to tell you the truth, I prefer the young folks because they're more open-minded. They're willing to take a chance and try something new compared to the adults. And like I said, you're right. Being a woman of color and mature, I have to remember not to bring out the old school mama techniques.
Okay.
I have to learn how to calm myself. It's like, no, you can't do this like you do at home. So, but I'm more of a, like I said, laid back. I'm open. It's really kind of hard to really say because I just let things flow. I'm learning that as I've gotten older. Just, if we can get people to change their mind on certain things, do certain things, or if I can get people to encounter more, you know, especially our young, that we need to focus really on now,
mm-hmm.
then I'm where I need to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
I think a lot of people who are in culinary school are younger, because I've been in this for years, and even myself, when I entered into culinary school, I thought of my career as a pathway, and a lot of us get really narrow on what that means. So when people's working with you, you seem really organized, whatever, how about you come work in this department or at this location? A lot of people who take on the moniker of chef narrow the opportunity that they want to get because they want to get to the executive chef level and they see a prescribed path. And I think, like you did, excuse me, and like I did, I was more open to the opportunity that I was afforded by all kinds of different levels of things. I've been a hostess in a restaurant. I've been a manager. I've been, you know, an independent contractor. I've been a consultant. For me, it seemed like I was going to embrace what was offered and see what I could get out of it, as opposed to having
right.
a real narrow focus on what I wanted to do. And
right.
you're right. Getting a hold of the young ones, this first year, it was actually food, convenience foods that they sell at grocery stores.
Right.
While that means my job is secure, but I'm saying that means chefs got a lot of work to do, but it also means that they're getting over with pretty conventional way they eat to eat a corporation that's feeding people.
Okay.
What do you think?
I'm sorry, I can't really hear you much because you're breaking up. I'm sorry.
Are we losing you?
Okay. You're breaking up.
Okay. I'm gonna connect our guests. So let me answer this. Okay. Let's see. I'm gonna hang up and call her right back. All right. So those of you listening, hold on a second and see what we do. But yeah, I found it really interesting in the last month or so, they tallied up the amount of money spent in it, that it was rather interesting for us to be spending more money. Restaurant, that girl.
Hello.
There you are. Okay. So, what I was asking and talking about was numbers have come out in the last month or so about how we spend our food dollars. And in reviewing it, restaurants, fast food, convenience food was more this year in history that we spend those items than we did at grocery stores. And I'm
right.
Always warning that I teach, when you hand over your need for integrity, how do you feel about that?
Why are we handing? Well, we're at the age of convenience. Everything, we're in the fast moving world, high tech world. And so what they did was they made food high tech to the point, quick and easy. You don't have to sit at home anymore. The age of family seems to become non-existent. You know how we used to sit at the table and everybody ate at the same time? Yeah. Everybody's gone so many different directions. You don't have that time anymore. Or they used to have it in which on Sundays, you know, you take that time out, but people don't do that anymore. So then also you got to consider, again, geographical location, the community we're in. Okay, we, in our community, we have more fast food restaurants, liquor stores than grocery stores. The grocery stores that we do have are not desirable, okay?
So we're touching on the subject of like food desert.
Yeah, right. I live in Roseland, or across the street from Roseland, and that is considered a food desert community. And
we got all kinds of things missing out of that community.
I'm sorry. One more time. I'm sorry.
I said, yeah, I'm teaching in that same community. There's a whole lot of things that were there that are no longer there and changed. And, you know, you go over there and the old, you know, there's an Aldi, there's a White Castle, there's a big Jewel food store closed. You got to drive or take a bus a couple, 2, 3, 4 miles.
Right.
To the grocery store.
And you have people that are limited on their transportation. You know, there's some people that can't afford to go. So you end up with these little corner stores that does not provide fresh fruits and vegetables. And if they do, how long it sits. So, I mean, you know, so many different things. But, again,
people don't have to settle for that. You know, sometimes it just takes that little effort just to go out and get it. Or I have even one even better. Start that little garden in your backyard, in the flower pot, in your apartment. You know, you got fresh organic right there. Little effort. Every little bit helps. Yeah, having more cooking classes, creating more farmers markets in our community. You know, there was one last year, and I don't know if it was successful or not, because every time I passed that place, no one was really there. So I really can't say, but, you know, just being more involved and having more farmers markets, just making the people in the community more aware. And then also it's about changing old habits into new.
So, what would you like to see the people that you touched on with dietary habits?
Well, what I would like to see, more involvement with the community. I'm sorry, hold on. You're breaking up still. That's why I'm having problems for whatever reason. I guess it's the weather here.
Okay.
It's not really working for me right at the moment. I think that's what's going on.
Okay. A little bit, audience, and we'll see if we get this cleared up.
Right.
We touched upon food deserts, and for some of you that may not exactly know what that means, is there was a mapping done for people to find out what their biggest challenges were in finding fresh fruit and vegetables in their area. So they did some mapping, and it was clear from the data, geographical data, that if you were in late middle class to lower class economic status, which there are of all of us in all ethnic groups, but if you were in a lower economic status, the availability of quality foodstuffs was harder to find than in mixed communities and or better economic areas. So if you lived in, if you know anything about Chicago, if you lived in, say, Beverly or Hyde Park or Lincoln Park, you had a much wider variety of available foods, stuffs through grocers and things of that nature, farmers market, than if you were in Kate's Lawndale Rolls of Food, where a crisp carrot was hard to find, a fresh bell pepper was hard to find. So you're limiting your ability to transport yourself back and forth, limited in the amount of things you can and go to a store, or even to be able to afford higher quality meat and vegetables. You're not going to go and buy daikon cabbage if all you really can afford to do is iceberg lettuce. Things of those neighbors making these trades off, and there are organizations that are fighting really hard to make that inequality more balanced. I was over yesterday in the Inglewood neighborhood, and one of the things under construction at 63rd and Halsted, they're putting up a brand new Whole Foods. The lot's been cleared, a lot of things are going on, and I was like, that's really interesting to me that Whole Foods, who seem to have a little bit of a crown as far as having healthy foodstuffs available, are taking the risk to put
one of their outlets in what was considered neighborhoods in Chicago, historically black for a very long time. But things are changing over there, and they're taking the risk that this will actually be issues in the community. It's a very interesting subject. Ramona, is the transmission a little better for you now? Okay, I'm not sure that we still have her on hook. I'm going to try to dial her back in one more time and see if we can get our guest back online. Let's see. Dialing one more time. Okay, so.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, does that sound all better
right.
for you?
Right. Yeah. So
yeah,
far, so good.
Good. Awesome. I was just informing our listening audience as to what is a food desert in particular,
right.
and how that's affecting certain people. And I shared with them that yesterday I was in Inglewood at Kennedy King College, and right across the street at 63rd and Halsted, they're building a brand new Whole Foods.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I really am.
I think that's a great step in the right direction. And I also think that it's connected with the regentrification of that neighborhood. And I'm hoping that the people that are currently there will adapt and start actually using that as a resource, as opposed to this being a signal in the whole generational demographic shift in the neighborhood. I'm hoping it doesn't signal that we're going to take this historically black area in the city and remove all of those people and change the face of that neighborhood completely.
Well, they're working on it. Slowly but surely, but my thing is being able to adapt to have whole food. I'm looking at affordability. You got to consider some of the people in that community. They are on food stamps, SNAP, limited income, however you want to call it. And just for me, myself, going into Whole Foods, I had to save up just to go in there. Because I know what I'm going to do when I get in there. So it's like, okay, should I pay a bill this month or go to Whole Foods? I think I better pay a bill. Go to Whole Foods another time.
That is absolutely a reality for folks. And, you know, I can completely understand why some people make the choices that they do. But at the same time, I ask questions like, okay, why is a 2-liter of cola half the price of the same amount of orange juice or apple juice? Why is that 99 cents? But the much better choice, the bottled water, the et cetera, the myriad of better choices of cola is 3 cents. Questions like that make me wonder, you know, I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, but things like that make you kind of go, what's going on?
Yeah, definitely. But as you were saying about bringing fresh foods in the community, as of last year, I had to stop due to a fire. I was partnering with groceries in the Grand Crossing community. And you know that's another one of our food desert communities. And we had a pilot grocery store right there on the corner of 76 and Cottage Grove. And what we did was we tried to introduce the community of using fresh fruits and vegetables, fresh meat. A lot of the meat came from the Amish community at reasonable prices. They also had programs in which I was involved, in which we tried to reassimilate our people in the community of eating healthier, eating better, so we held classes. It was another class called Shopping for Change that was funded by the University of Chicago Medicine. We paid people to come to these different classes. Did you know they wouldn't show up? We had a few folks that just wouldn't do it for whatever reason. It's like, I'm paying you just to come and eat a carrot. I mean, you know, that's exaggerating a little bit. Couldn't get them to come. It was very hard.
Background did program target?
It really targeted people with diabetes, and the age was from between 18 and older.
Oh, okay.
18 and older.
Were there a lot of people invited that were 18 with diabetes?
Just about, because what we did was I collaborated with a naturopath. Also, she had like the day shift classes and I had the night shift classes. And what they did was they canvassed the whole neighborhood within a 5-mile radius all the way around to let people know that you're welcome to come and learn a few things, especially when it comes to your diabetes. You get paid, you get free groceries, everything. You know, we was giving away things just to get people to try something different. And we had a few takers, but not as many as we wanted to have. You know,
we had a big obstacle for some of the people who knew about food.
The obstacles that we had was a lot of people weren't familiar with fresh, or it was something programmed in their head that it tastes bad. And, you know, I asked people, well, have you ever had it before? They're like, no. So how you know something that tastes bad? But I bet you if I slather it with cheese and everything else, they'll eat it. But again, it's all a mindset. So, you know, it was a matter of introducing them or just telling them just to take a chance. And a few, I did convert a few, and there was a few that were like, no, I'm not doing this. I don't care what you say. Yeah, I have diabetes. I have chronic illness. This is the way I am. This is the way I'm going to die. Okay, but at least I tried. My goal is if I can get one to make changes in their life, I've succeeded. You know, put it this way, long hours and the pain sinks. But
yeah,
I do it because it's fun.
Yeah, and it's needed. It's needed.
Yeah.
We're having a similar fight. The high school population that I serve is at Finger High School, right in the heart of Roseland, and the kids participate in my program, receive a stipend. I get some who actually have a heart for culinary, who see it as a possible career path. But then I also more than a few that say, well, I don't have a job after school, don't have anything other than my homework, and I like to eat, so I'm going to take this class. So,
right.
Okay. And there's a couple that have been completely honest with me and be like, listen, chef, prom is coming, summer's coming, I need this little bit of money. And
right.
So I'm taking the class. Okay, well, they're going to have to listen to me talk about food value, diversity, nutrition, and all these other things. Because I noticed that I would say to my kids, even on a day that we're doing something, quote-unquote, not as healthy as us, say they're baking muffins. And I'm like, okay, we're going to make a chocolate chip muffin. Go get the butter. And they would go in the cooler or go on the table and not be 100% confident that I'm buying the product that I'm looking for. And it's so what do you think about this? And they're thinking of with it on to the butter. Like, no, babe, that's margarine. What's margarine?
Right.
We've never heard the word. And I'm like, okay,
yeah,
that's scary. You know, I'm like,
yeah,
what's cheese to you? I'm like, those little yellow squares and those little plastic, that's not real cheese. But, chef, it tastes good. That may be. But it doesn't mean it's food. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I got you. But you know one thing that they have taken out of the school is home economics. Or does it still exist? I don't know.
Are things of that through the system? However, quite a few of the schools have taken effort and made it actually a culinary class. Finger High School has a full-time culinary teacher. She teaches
okay.
6 or 7 periods a day. And so they learn a lot of the principles of culinary. And Simeon has this, Hirsch High School, quite a few have gone to a culinary track. And the adoption of which is kind of connected with the thought that, yes, while we want you for college, that everybody is suited to be an engineer. So more things are considered trade school or, you know, hands up a job. I mean, so they put for cosmetology classes in some of these locations so that you can see that if you're not good at X, Y, and 2 economics before you. So a lot of the work I do is I'm my kids and showing them what a chef is, what do I do, how I affect change, and for others. You know, I've never in my I've taken time off, I've gotten sick, I've been better, you know, things of those natures. I've always been able to work. And that, for them, that model to see.
Right.
Oh, my other line of thinking to discuss with you is your food.
Okay. I'm sorry, but you're breaking up again. We're
Are you there?
Yeah, we're breaking up again. I'm gonna move in another spot. Maybe that'll work. Okay, you keep talking. You can keep talking. I'm just moving.
Okay. what I was trying to hit upon, and hopefully you can pick up a bit of this, is I want to know more about your culinary history. But for myself, my family, we had many a member that grew up in southern states in the United States, and they moved to northern cities, Chicago and New York and things of those natures, and they took with them their food culture, things they like to eat. Do you see the
Okay, culinary history. You know what? My culinary history was just a little bit of southern, but more northern. My mother didn't cook a lot of greens and cornbread and ham hocks and things of that nature because her mother didn't teach her that. So we were generally basic cooking, you know, the meat, potatoes. My father came from a big family. There's things that he ate a lot that he swore he would never eat again. So when it comes to, right, so we were limited, you know, certain things. Daddy wanted steak, that's what we ate. Daddy want this, that's what we ate. But anything else, when it comes to trying something different, Daddy wasn't having it. So we can forget that. So as I've gotten older I became more curious about what else is going on. But then also, that's when chronic illness and diabetes kicked in at the same time. So I've learned to change my way of looking at food in a different way because of the upbringing, because of the things that I had in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I just, like I said, the type of style, there's no one particular style that I have or anything that I brought with me. I create my own. I'm freestyle. I just do whatever comes to me. I take other people's styles or that I see, because, you know, Food Network is my main channel, and just make it my own. It's all about creativity. That's the word. I don't care what you do. It's just being creative. And since I have to deal with a lot of different type of people, personalities, locations, you try to adapt or assimilate like them to a point in mm-hmm. which you still slide in the good stuff and they don't even know it until after they've eaten it and praise how great it is. Then you tell them, guess what you just ate? And then once that usually happens, it's like, wow, okay, I can do this. There is no particular style for me. Never thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's something
okay.
to think on. I just like to go with the flow.
Right. And that's cool. Our listening audience, if anybody's interested, we got about 15 minutes left in the broadcast. And if you want to call in with a question, we would love to have and hear from you guys. The call-in number is 657-383-0717. Again, 657-383-0717. We would love to hear from you if you're out there listening. Even if it's not a phone call, we're just going to keep while I'm having this conversation with another female is enlightening that we can understand that same kind of realm. Teaching in my city, I've been at it for about a year and a half. And the ability to attempt to impact someone positively has really been a benefit to me. I think I'm getting more out of my connections with my kids than maybe they even can imagine. So it's really kind of cool. Say to our audience as your main kind of goal for your career, what's upcoming? What do you want to see next?
To be able to retire from the real job of 32 years and do what I really love to do full time. Also, to be able to work on my nonprofit organization is in the mix, in which I can get enough grants to spread the word even more to people for free. My goal is just to be able to continue what I do. Mainly, that's it. But if I can do it on a full-time basis, that would be cool, too. But right now, the real job is what keeps me going, to pay the bills. You know, also,
yeah.
thing I do comes out of my pocket, unless I get lucky and get a sponsor that is willing to pay me and just pay, period, you know, to keep this going. So I must really like it because, like
yeah.
I said, it's costly. It's really costly. And there's times that I thought about giving up on it, but I've been going at it for so long that it's like, why give up on it now? Shoot, I have to do something when I retire, whenever that happens. But until then, I'm letting Chef in the Hood become a fun project, a
mm-hmm.
hobby, because once it becomes work, it's not fun anymore. Trust
yes,
me.
No. I would agree. I would agree. Having positions in this industry that are less than optimal, like you said, it paid the bills. But don't ever think that it's too late. This is obviously a labor of love for you. And always remember that Colonel Sanders was 65 before he ever opened a chicken restaurant.
Wow. Okay. I'm getting close.
The future is as bright as you make it. And
one
of the things I love about our industry is there is constant change and growth. And there's constantly something else to learn.
Always. Always. And I tell people, just because you're a chef don't mean you know everything. There's something else somebody else might know somewhere else and give you that idea. Or, you know, one thing about being a chef is the exchange of other ideas from other people. That's what makes us good at what we do in the industry.
Yes, It's so inspiring to work with people with passion, people who have people. You know, you can find yourself in the least optimal situation. This other thing. All the employees working there and really in that level. Hey, when you're deaf and you think that, you know, you can't, you know, you're platinum, you find out that, okay, you're not the master of Italian, but you're not the master of Asian, or you're not the master of pastry. And so there's always something else to learn.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's why I like just being around other people to the point of just learning what's going on. And then also I was honored to be able to be someone's mentor. And so far, so good. He's doing good in the culinary industry. You know, he's saying, well, I want to be a chef when I grow up. I said, keep going to the School of Hard Knocks. Eventually, you will graduate.
You can
become that chef. Because a chef is not something given. It's something earned. That's what I was told.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Just because you graduated out of culinary school don't make you a chef. You got to go through the changes. You got to go through the... And then if you really want to be a chef, you create your own business, and you really would know the responsibility from start to finish. Then you can say, okay, I earned that right to become a chef, because a chef ain't nothing but the chief, the head guy or girl of that restaurant or that business. So, you know, my thing is just keep going. Just keep doing what you're doing. Trust me, you will get there. And like I said, I'm getting there, but sometimes I just feel that I'm just a cook with a degree, trying to pay back that school loan. That's it. You know, sometimes I figure I'm that big time chef. It depends upon the mood. You know,
absolutely.
So.
When I was talking with another female chef and colleague of mine, that subject came up. And I even asked her, like, you know, how long did it take you to feel comfortable having somebody call you chef? And for me, it was quite a while because I took it really seriously. For me, it was also the direction that it was coming from. Like, when kids call me chef, I'm comfortable with that. But when I worked at the Palmer House, because the chef founder had 5 years on his belt, I called him chef. He called me by my first name.
Right.
And that's how I think it you know, was exactly what it should have been. It's not, you know, it's not like you got a PhD in medicine and so the letters go behind your name and, you know, you're a doctor, blah, blah, blah. It's not quite that. So, yeah, with reverence tolerance and patience and a whole lot of time post culinary school, I got more comfortable with the idea of where that, you know, where that title came from and what it means to me.
Yeah, does. And then also at the same time, get having those designations behind your name. Well, I got a few, but, you know, so that really doesn't mean much to me because I'm still who I am, Mona. You know,
yeah.
And if you call me, you know, I'm Chef Mona Cool, or I'm just regular Mona Cool. I know who I am. I know what I've done. I know the schools of hard knocks that I've been through. That's all that counts. Really, tell you the truth, you know, as long as we all get along, as long as they know who's facilitating this, whatever I'm doing, I'm cool with it. You know, I don't make a big deal of that title. That title doesn't make me, you know, me makes me, or my love makes me of what I do.
So. Okay. Yeah, you broke up a little bit, but we got you loud and clear. No, it's good. We are very good. Okay. So
we got good.
Absolutely. We got about 6 minutes left. So I'm going to leave you with the final thought. I'm going to ask you one final question. If you had won that big lotto a couple of weeks ago and had decided to open a business, briefly, what it would look like?
Okay, one more time. If I won the big lotto
and decided to open your food establishment, what would it look like?
Oh, I can tell you that. Community kitchen.
Yeah.
Definitely a community kitchen in which we can all join together as one and learn from each other and be able to take away some knowledge in culinary, whether it's boiling water, steaming fish. However, that's really the thing I would love to have. Community kitchens, just a joining of many. That's my dream.
That would be wonderful, and I think more efforts in that arena is absolutely necessary. We touched on, you know, the disintegration of the nuclear family, the need for faster, swifter access to food, the technologically based society we're developing has more focus on the individual than on the group. And I think a community kitchen, cooperative food outlets, locally resourced food products from farmers and cattlemen and all of those things, egg producers, to get absolutely more micro instead of more macro kind of efforts, I think it's exactly
right.
What we
and they do make. Have those in Vancouver, Canada, and Seattle, Washington. And I would like to mirror after those.
Awesome. Good to know.
Yeah.
I haven't been to either one of those places yet, but they are on my list of places to visit.
Me too.
Get out there. Awesome. Okay, we only got a couple minutes left. I have really enjoyed talking with you, Chef Ramona Jackson Baptiste. Thank you for joining us today.
You.
I can't.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I follow you mostly on Facebook and Twitter and blah, 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 blah. And efforts are not unseen. That, in and of itself, is the gold.
Yes.
I can mine diamonds all day, but I want to, you know, I think it can be do simple things. I went to the farmer's market once. I had never seen purple cauliflower. They had never seen a fresh chicken. That
make coleslaw. The entire class was like, I was crazy. Chef, I called my dad. I don't know why you want to do that. It was a struggle. But when they saw my rainbow coleslaw,
right,
so good herbs, I literally got some Converse and was like, oh my God, Chef, this is so good. That's my victory. That's my goal. I will continue to seek those minor victories. Now, she might not be able to order that around the corner at the little greasy spoon, but hopefully it'll be sitting in her head that when she decides to take on the task of feeding her family in the future, or even, you know, her elders now,
right,
that something like come to her and she'll try to make that on her own. And that's all that I ask. I make students at least minimum taste everything we
right.
prepare, whether they're confident in it. Small victories are so precious to me.
They are.
Sure, you get the same kind of response with the people that you touch and agree with. You have an excellent, and with that lovely announcement of 60 seconds left, I'm going to say goodbye to you, Miss Ramona, and everybody.
All right,
who
goodbye to you.
Listen, I appreciate my audience. I love my guests, and this will be archived for anybody who has not had the pleasure of joining us live. Please follow button and keep up with us, and we put many, many more things available for your listening pleasure. I will also be adding this broadcast to the iTunes and iHeart Radio Network so that people can reach our feed through the well. This is Chef Elena Alexander wishing you the best of food and love and culture that you could possibly have. Have a great afternoon. See you on the other side.
All right. Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.